Hi, this is the Lisa Kramer Show, the Spectrum Talk, A Look Within. Glad you could join me today. Wanted to talk to you about some special things that I am thinking about. First off, I wanted to talk to you about some current events. Some of the current events that we have are in the nation are Roe versus Wade. There was a national day quite recently in the 50 states. There's a lot going on. All 50 states were protesting, but they were saying that they have the right to give their opinion. Now, what came out of this was a lot of people came to DC. Why did they come to DC? Because they were going to parade on the Capitol. And that's fine. You don't have to agree with Roe versus Wade. Remember, this is what's happening in our nation. You don't have to agree with it, but you shouldn't hurt or do anything which causes anyone distress. Unfortunately, there was some harassment going on. Some people took it a little bit too far, and they went to some justices' homes, is what I've been told, what I had read. This is not in the spirit of democracy. This is not in the spirit of being able to talk about your right as a person. And this also not in the spirit of saying what you need to say in a proper way. This only leads to more violence, and it really gets away from the point in hand, which is your right to demonstrate in a peaceful way about your opinion of Roe versus Wade. No matter what you agree or what you don't agree, if you agree, if you don't agree, that's fine. But it's important that this issue become an issue that is going to resonate with people regarding the right to speak up and their opinions, not an issue where people are going to be hurt or harassed. So that's one current event that's going on today. Now, at the Spectrum Talk, A Look Within, I would like to talk about different events that have been taken a little bit too far. In my show, which is a mental health show, we talk a lot about what is going on in the world and why. Quite recently, there was a shooting in Buffalo. The shooting took place in Buffalo, New York. A shooter went into shooting, I believe it was outside of a supermarket. He went inside. He specifically targeted this place in Buffalo and this community in Buffalo because he had a hatred for the Black community. Initially, he had wanted to go to a school, specifically a high school, and do his rampage because he felt there were more students. He then changed his mind and went to a supermarket. So on a Saturday afternoon, I believe 13 people were killed. And I believe 11 of those people were Black and two were white. And it's the important thing from this, the important takeaway from this is not that, you know, people are Black, white, who cares? The important takeaway is this particular person did have an issue in high school where he had talked about his hatred of people of color. And he did go to counseling for a while, and I guess he was okay, and then it stopped. My feeling on this is it's got to continue. When somebody knows that they can go to counseling and then they can say the right things and do the right things, and then it stops and there's no follow-up, that person may or may not really get the point. Obviously, this person did not get the point. Plus, people are generally smart when it comes to counseling. And this person got the message that he can say what people need to hear and then go away. And then they'll leave him alone. And is exactly what he did. The point is that he should have been followed a little more closely. And this person, I believe, traveled to Buffalo. He may have been a New York resident. I'm not sure, but he did travel to Buffalo. Also, what came out in the news was that if he had gotten away with this, he talked about another shooting. On another front, in Florida, which is a national issue, speaking of guns, the governor of Florida, Governor DeSantis, regarding gun control, he feels that people can purchase guns. He's making this a law. People can purchase a gun without a background check. To me, that's very dangerous, but it is the law, which means that you're going to have, in my opinion, people who are going to be given guns, even though the majority of people are responsible. There's a certain process that needs to take place, I believe. Just like you need to get a background check for everything else, you need to get checked out. I believe that when you get a gun, you should be checked out, which is a simple procedure. And I think a lot of times, especially with technology, people know everything about you. They know your life history. And sometimes things show up in reports or on the computer that need to be dealt with. And I feel that without getting a background check, whether it be a positive or a negative, it sets a precedent to say anyone can walk in, basically, which anyone can now, and get a gun and do whatever they want to do with a gun. Now, that's not saying people will go around shooting people, because I hope not, but it's definitely a mental health issue. You have to be checked out, I believe, before you do anything that can hurt anyone else. Let's take driving a car. If you didn't have the skills to drive a car, you wouldn't get a license. First, in different states, people get permits. They have to go with an adult or someone who has a qualified license. They have to prove themselves. They have to take a test. It's only then that they drive. Now, obviously, there are people who do drive and they break the law and they speed and they, you know, do things they shouldn't do, and deaths occur. However, there is a process that people do and people go through where they have to say that they've satisfied this process before they can even get on the road. My opinion is that I feel that a process of getting a gun should be done as well. On the international front, we have Ukraine, and the president's wives, both in America and Ukraine, have met and have talked. And from what I'm reading, we have been making some strides in Ukraine, but there's still more to do. As always, Russia has more power, but they still underestimate the Ukrainian people. These are the mental health takeaways that I feel are important to discuss, because people often underestimate people. This is on a large scale, but on a small scale, you should never underestimate anyone, because when someone's in trouble or someone needs a community to stand behind them, that's where they get the strength. And obviously, in this situation, the Ukrainians are still fighting together. they're still bonding together. There's still a connection, even with people who have left the country. There is still a connection, and other people are still fighting for that. I believe the newest country that wanted to join NATO is either Finland or Sweden. Now, they've always been very neutral. What does that say? To me, that says that we are all here to help each other. And it's appearing to a lot of countries, obviously, that they would like to join forces because it seems necessary now with what's happening in Ukraine that other countries, we all need to be united. And in order to be united, we have to join NATO, which helps with helping out other countries who are in trouble. So countries that have been neutral in the past, like Finland, Switzerland, any other right now, but they have come to realize that in order to lend a hand, because they see this is wrong, they need to belong to an organization like NATO to gather around support. So we really are all interconnected in the world, in life, and this just shows how countries on a macro level, remember a macro level means a level which is worldwide, on a macro level, these countries are uniting to say this is wrong. And I guess I read it as a standpoint that although they were neutral for so long, this issue has made them want to band together. They'll still be neutral, maybe. They'll still be, you know, doing what they do as a neutral country. But if anything like this should come up again, or now it's going on now, they want to be a part of it. They want to give their opinion and their support. So the mental health takeaway for this is that we all need some support. And we're all getting support, and we're more alike than different. When it comes to our health, when it comes to people, when it comes to atrocities, we need to band together. And we are a nation. We are actually becoming a world that's banding together. And technology helps with this. Let's go to arts and entertainment. There's a trial going on. I mentioned it last week. Johnny Depp and his ex-wife, Amber Heard, are in court. They're suing each other for, I think he's suing her because she made some remarks about him, and he needs to defend himself. Now, interestingly, there's a mental health takeaway from all this. I'm really not, I mean, I watch it. I'm not really that interested, quite frankly, in the what's going on. I mean, a divorce is a divorce, and this is the way rich people live, and that's fine. What I'm interested in is the takeaway that professionals have. And what I do is I listen to what goes on in the background. When the lights are off, the cameras are off, and the actual TV show, which is Court TV, has these different professionals talking. At one point, they had a lie detector person come on. I guess he detects stress because everything in a courtroom is taped. So he uses the tapes that he, you know, they have recorded from this divorce situation, and he sees where the stress is. There's also a psychologist, and there's also an attorney, and there's also a person who is in law enforcement. So these are four different disciplines that are talking about what they see. And what came out of this, and it is a mental health issue. When we talk about mental health, we talk about what we're seeing in our minds, what's mentally happening. But there's also other things that are happening. It's body language is happening. And that is what this panel had talked about. Let me give you an example. And this is really arts and entertainment, because this has to do with people lining up to want to see this these entertainers, basically Johnny Depp, go through this. And remember, not too long ago, well, actually, it is a long time ago. I think now there are cameras in courtrooms. I think it started maybe 30 years ago with the O.J. Simpson. Now it's a matter of just, you know, it's commonplace that there's people that are in the courtroom and there are cameras in the courtroom. And if there's cameras in the courtroom, people are going to come because to them it's art and entertainment. It's also a way to show their support. So regardless of what you think and what you've heard, that is something that is a takeaway for you. But the mental health issue, the mental health takeaway for me is that body language has to do with mental health. Let me tell you what each of these professionals had said. First professional said that this is a person who is a psychologist. And what she said was that when you talk and it's free flowing, your body language shows it. Which means if you talk about violence, if you talk about something very specific or very dramatic that happened to you, when you talk about it, you have body movements that show you. If you're pushed, you show it many times when you're talking about it. Your hands are raised, your body flinches back. If you talk about being dragged on the floor, you know, by your hair, you talk about it. So the person you're talking to can really feel in their mind, this is what is happening to this person. I can feel what they're feeling. So body language has a lot to do with it. And in this case, what they were assessing was who had body language, who didn't have body language. Sometimes the body language doesn't go along with what you're saying. Sometimes the body language is different than what you're actually talking about, or sometimes it's overly exaggerated. So body language should happen naturally. When you talk about being hit or pushing back, you actually talk about it and then you actually flex your body back. When you were actually talking about something that happens to you, you should, which is commonplace, this psychologist thought, or this, I think she was a psychologist or a psychiatrist, your body language should show it. You should actually be talking and you should be moving your hands. Your voice pitch should be changing. So that's something. Now, I'm not giving you opinion on what they thought, okay? I'm not doing that. Okay, she talked about body language. Interestingly enough, everybody had a take on body language. Let's talk about the attorney. The attorney felt that the body language is very important. The body language of looking at the jury versus looking at the attorney. The body language of taking a drink. The body language of how you're dressed. The body language of taking apart what you're saying. I've been in court for many years when I worked for the Department of Human Health and Services. And one thing that you do is you really have to listen to the question, even if you say, please repeat the question, because you want to get it right. And you don't want to argue with the attorney, but you want to make sure that the attorney knows that you're listening. You could even take a piece of paper and a pencil. They also look at what is acceptable in court and what isn't. Only answer the question. If you tend to go on and on and on, like this attorney had mentioned, things could be stricken from the record only because you didn't answer the question. If it's a simple yes and no question, you have to really understand where it's coming from and where it's leading. And you have to understand that in certain cases, attorneys are very methodical. So they lead up to a point. And you don't want to confuse yourself, which is important. Now we go to the person who is in law enforcement. The person who was in law enforcement also mentioned that this trial takes place years after a divorce and a couple years after the suit, the particular harassment suit was, I believe it's harassment, or defamation suit rather, was given. So his whole thing was he did get some points that both Mr. Depp and Ms. Heard had done. However, he's coming from usually by the time it gets to him, he's the first person that sees the person that is putting the complaint or there's a problem with, or the first person that's arrested. So when he did his assessment, he really felt that a lot of people were looking, you know, when he was looking at the two people in question, which is obviously Mr. Depp and Ms. Heard, he felt that he could tell a lot about the body language even years later. And basically what he said was, when you do not answer the question and you go off on tangents, and he even gave examples of other known people who he has dealt with that have done the same thing, that's an issue for him, because he doesn't want to hear your life story. He doesn't want to hear about what you think. He wants to know quickly, 1, 2, 3, make an assessment, then he can get to work. If you talk about too many things and go through what you believe, you are not answering the question. Again, mental health issues. Speak about the questions, even though it's not mental health. It is mental health, because your health, your stress level, their stress level is being assessed all the time. And if you are not talking or doing what is expected of you, you can go off on a tangent and forget about what you're talking about, not give out good information. And remember, a lot of times it's you're there, you talk, you're off. So you got to make it your best thing. And that's why being mentally okay, even if it's taking your time, even if it's listening, even if it's with a piece of paper and a pencil, you need to do it. Okay. Then we have the last person was the, I guess, for lack of a better word, it was the lie detector analyst. And, you know, when you sit there with a lie detector, they usually hook things up. Okay. Well, he didn't have the opportunity to do that, but what he did have are the tapes. And what he said was, he did assess each of the tapes that he heard from Ms. Heard and Mr. Depp. And what he came up with was, yes, at this point, the monitor went up. So that means this person had stress. Then it went down. Then it went up. You can't help it. If, you know, when you're stressed, it does affect your body. Your heart goes up. Your movements go up. You tense, and because you tense, your stress level goes up. Your breathing goes up. Your breathing is shallow. Your breathing is low. Your breathing is high. So it was interesting that in itself, when I talk about teamwork and I talk about different disciplines, even when it comes to assessing a trial and people who are on trial, that there needs to be a team, because there's so many aspects of how people testify. And the mental health takeaway is that mental health is health. Not only is it health, but health relates to the way we make connections. And connections relate to the way we communicate. And the way we communicate is a way which we talk to others and talk about ourselves. So we have to know the way to cope with our anxiety. And sometimes we can't help our anxiety because we don't always know the questions, especially in court, that are coming. But knowing how to cope, that's where attorneys come in. That's where attorneys help. That's where attorneys, you know, use their expertise to say that's out of the realm of the question, or, you know, I object, or that's, and then finally the judge comes in and says, I agree with this attorney, but not attorney. Okay, that's the last part of it. But the beginning part of it is your mind is going through all this. You have to answer the questions, and you have to do this, and they have to do that. And then they're being looked at. And then you have the people that are in the, you know, are in the gallery there, who are there. Then you have people who are as part of the jury. And it was interesting, and this is where I'm going to end, because people can make their own opinions. I'm going to end where a jury has certain instructions, which means lots of times a jury can say, I really think that they, you know, may have done it, or I'm not really sure, but I've been given certain rules. Again, we talk about rules. I've been given certain rules, and I need to follow the rules. I just need to follow the rules. So if I follow the rules and check it off, just like our kids do, this, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, okay? They didn't fulfill all the rules, or they did fulfill all the rules. And plus, it's 12 different people. I can tell you, okay, that during the testimony of both litigants here, Mr. Depp and Ms. Heard seemed to look at the jury more every time she answered a question. And what was told was that the jury was not looking at her. Why? Because we talk about senses, which gets into mental health too. By looking at her, they want to concentrate on what they're doing. They want to concentrate on writing notes. They want to look at her body language. But after a while, it was becoming too much, or that's what was reported. Mr. Depp also looked at the jury, but he spent more time looking in. He pushed his body in, trying to concentrate more on what his attorneys were asking him, or what the other attorneys were asking him during cross. The reason I bring this up is because you can see how mental health, regardless of where we're at, what we're doing, comes into play in every area of our lives. Mental health is health. If you're not mentally healthy, that's a big part of you that is not healthy. It doesn't mean that you have to be happy all the time, but if there is a lot of stress in your life, it will affect your health, and your health affects the way you approach the world, and it also affects the way that people see you. And you need to learn how to cope. And plans change. And in this case, with the jury, plans change. And these people, plus they're being, these people who are in court, the plans change constantly. Let's talk about giving and the people in your neighborhood. Last broadcast, I didn't get to talking about who are the people in your neighborhood. And that's something that I'm going to bring up. In my neighborhood, you know, I talk about a micro level, which means actually in my neighborhood. But then there's a macro level, which means people that are in Florida, but not part of my neighborhood. Let's start with the micro. I live in a development, and I walk with a friend. And one day we were walking down the street, and this little dog comes out, and he just runs in the street. And it's one of those really small dogs who, if a car zooms by, unfortunately, or if a bird could even attack a dog, that poor dog would be hurt. So what happened? My friend and I go over, we pick up the dog. The dog is so small, and I'm not the biggest person either. Dog fits in the palm of my hand. It's like, well, we have to do something. How did this dog get out? Well, we come to find that there was a fence, but the dog was so small that it fit through the slats of the fence. And the slats of the fence were metal. So it kind of was separated a little bit much. So the dog really didn't get hurt. It wasn't like it's wood and it had splinters. And the dog just ran out. This is where technology comes into play. We look at the dog. The dog had a collar. It had a phone number. We called the phone number, because we all have cell phones. The owner picked up. We told the owner that we had the dog, that we were holding the dog, and the owner was shopping. The dog owner came home, got the dog. We told the owner what happened, and, you know, the dog was helped, and we helped the dog. We felt really good about it. But it shows how technology and how caring, you have to be alert, how we, you know, if we didn't come at that time, that dog could have been all over the neighborhood. And it shows how technology brings us together, and how a connection, feeling something, not just feeling about people, but feeling about things, really makes a difference. Okay. On a macro level, I want to talk to you about the people in our area. This week we had some car troubles, and we had a flat tire, and we took it to the person who we usually go to, my husband usually goes to, and he right away, he said, okay, I'll stop what I'm doing. I have some time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to check it. I'm going to see if you need a tire. I'm going to see if you need a new patch, this and that, and I'll get back to you. So, okay, that's fine. Later on, he gets back to us. We come back. He said, listen, I would just do a patch. I wouldn't do a tire. I don't have the authority. Remember, we're in a, you know, everybody works and everybody has a boss or everybody, there's a hierarchy. I don't have the authority to say I can just patch it up. So if you don't want a new tire, I can't help you. So come on over. If I were you, I wouldn't get a new tire. I would just patch it up. We came over. He didn't charge us anything. He took out his, you know, took from his time. We were one of the first people he dealt with. We did go and we did find someone who could patch it up. So we left him and we got it done. People like to know that they're valued and they count. And what my husband and I have always done, whether it be the people who, you know, help us mow the lawn, people that help us with our trash, people that help us with our recyclables, we give, like the trash people, we put water on. A simple thing, but it makes a difference. They usually put our cans up by our garage. And when they see us, they often wave to us, which is really nice. Okay. The same thing happens with the same thing happened this week with the guy at the car lot. What we did was, in order to show our appreciation, we brought over a gift. He was very surprised, but it meant a lot to people. Showing people that they are valued, showing people that they count, really means a lot to them. And giving is a connection. And that says, hey, I didn't expect this, but you really felt that I really went out of my way, which is something I do all the time. And it's nice to that you appreciate me. And that makes such a difference. And you're doing it just for the intrinsic value of doing it. Remember, we talked about intrinsic values. You're doing it because, yes, it was nice to do, but you want to make him feel special because you want to give more than you want to take. So the mental health takeaway is let's be a little more appreciative. And sometimes saying thank you by doing something is important. Let's kind of go off shoot in that. Say giving is more than a gift. There are some holidays that come up that we do a lot of giving because people want to make connections. They want to actually do something. They want to make memories. They want to share memories and they want to make new memories for their children. Recently, it was Mother's Day. My husband lost his mother recently. She had lived with us for 6 years. And we had gone to the cemetery to visit her. And interestingly enough, a lot of people came. Everybody comes. We always bring my son because we feel that this is a part of life too. And we observed many people coming. And we also observed a family doing a whole ceremony and also bringing in smaller children. And you could see that they were doing some kind of ceremony, and then they, you know, let the kids play and they let the kids be there. And the kids were little, they were like 2 or 3 years old. What this says to me is sometimes we need to do for ourselves, we need to physically do and really push with our senses. We really need to feel our senses. We not only need to say, okay, this is a special day, I remember my mom, but a lot of us need to go out. We need to do something. We need to look at something. We need to talk to something. We need to talk to somebody. Sometimes people just think and they do something special. They might go to something that was their mom's favorite store. They might look at photographs. In our particular case, we did go and we did visit her. And it just shows you that people, the mental health takeaway is that people need to do something that moves them, whether it be physically move them, whether it be to physically get in a car, whether it be to look at an album, something. We need to make that connection. And because it's only one-sided when it comes to the person who is not with us anymore, doing something is a help to us. Doing something is also a way that we connect because we are making ourselves move with our bodies. These are memories that are shared and new. The mental health takeaway, like I said before, is we are physically doing something, but we're also mentally doing something. And being social, which is something we can talk to our kids about, being social is doing things with other people. The mental health takeaway for this is there's different strokes for different folks. Our kids can be social. We could bring our kids to things. Okay. We could have brought our child to see our mom or to see their grandparent, or our child could sit in a group and not say anything, but they're there. Someone's there. And the splinter skill is some children will talk, some children won't, but you have them there. You have them participate in whatever way they can, even if you have to monitor them. I've talked a lot about this on previous shows, and I'm going to keep talking about it because exposure is the key. The theme of my show is mental health, and mental health is health. And this is going to be a theme of my shows, of all my shows. And I put a word to it. And I like this phrase, mental health is health, because this is a show about mental health. I'm not going to take all the credit for this because I saw this in a commercial. This commercial mentioned that mental health is health. And what they did was, just like I had talked about commercials with hidden themes in them, in other words, getting across what they want to talk about, but doing it in a way that we can connect to mentally, socially, physically. This was a commercial about a retired football player. His name is Nate Burleson. And he said that football itself, you have to be very, very disciplined, but sometimes you have to put things in the back of your mind when they should really be in the front of your mind. And he realized after he retired that he had mental health issues that he needed to get help for. And he felt that if you need mental health, if you have mental health problems, you need a friend, you need help, you need a friend you can talk to. He wanted to come out and say, I'm here, I'm a role model, I was a football player. If I can say this about myself, I want you to realize it about yourself. And that's what this is all about too. People are connecting because they really understand that mental health is important and anybody can have mental health. So this is going to lead into my next chapter, which is chapter 61. We talked about mental health. We're going to talk about a specific mental health and the people who have this mental disorder. This next chapter is called, it's chapter 61. It's called Obsessive Compulsive Behavior. Now, the topic is role models, mentors, and everyday people. Now, talking point one, we're just going to recap of the DSM, what the DSM is. The DSM is a book. It's called the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Health Orders. It just talks about what doctors, social workers, and counselors use because there has to be a standard that we go by to order to assess, because this is going to be passed along. Now, remember, it's your job to familiarize yourself with the word DSM and also get the copy of those reports. So we're going to talk about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which is doing things over and over again, like hand washing, but also obsessive compulsive personality, which is a personality disorder, which is a little different than the washing of the hands. But it does, both things are related. I'm not going to go into it because of the lack of time right now, but I just want to say that your job as a parent is to understand that doctors and therapists use the DSM and to get your child's diagnosis. Nowadays, you don't have to look at the DSM, but you have to know where to go if you look it up on Google, if you really want to know. You need to be an advocate. That's the first step. So the mental health takeaway is get involved. Let's talk about talking point number two real quickly. People with OCD, the diagnosis, how it presents itself. It presents itself because it is interfering with everyday life, either with other people or with the person itself. Sometimes the person with this disorder doesn't realize it, or if they do, they can't help themselves. And sometimes they do realize it, but they can't do anything about it. So others around them have a hard time getting through to them unless there's a realization of what's going on. As a parent, as a brother or sister, as a community, we need to recognize this and get help. Let's talk about some famous people who have OCD. Some of the famous people that have OCD are people that are in our neighborhood that we see every day. Let's talk about first person on my list is, let's see, Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber has ADHD and obsessive compulsive disorder. He has channeled that into his music, but he remembers as a kid, he was pretty much hyper and he was pretty much a loner, but that only helped him challenge his singing ability. Another person that we may know and like a lot is, I'm going to go through this quickly and I'll get into it more in another broadcast, is David Beckman. Now, David Beckman is very interesting. David Beckman is married to one of the Spice Girls, I believe. And she actually called his behavior weird because she didn't get it. But David Beckman, he actually, I believe he actually, here's my paper. He actually has a habit of doing everything in an even manner to the point he has OCD. He does not have ADD, but he disclosed this in a BBC, which is an English broadcast. He said that he has a habit of doing everything in order. What he does is when he gets into a hotel room, he will rearrange the hotel room. He lines up the soft drinks and they have to be in pairs. If there's three soft drinks there, he will take one away, put it away where he can't see it. He also, you know, everything's got to be in pairs, everything. It just bothers him. So he will just, as soon as he hits the hotel room, he looks around and says, oh, I got to take this away. I got to make this a pair. You know, this is how he is, and he just does it, and that makes him relax. There's something in him that says, I need that, okay? That's obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, let's talk about the personality, because that's part of it too. David Beckman. Okay, I just found this. His wife is Victoria. She was from the Spice Girls. He is, okay, not only does he do things in pairs, but when he goes to a hotel room, he puts all the leaflets in a drawer. It's too much for him. He's got to just put everything away. Everything's got to be clear. So he's got the two drinks, the pairs of the two drinks, and everything is clear. And I feel comfortable telling you this because he was comfortable telling you this. Okay. Mr. Beckman wears white clothes, only white clothes to matches. He will rearrange the furniture in his hotel room. He rearranges the furniture in his house. Okay. He buys 30 pairs of Calvin Klein underwear and he lines them up by color. Okay. At his house, he has to have three refrigerators. He has a refrigerator, and his wife says he's a refrigerator coordinator. He has a refrigerator for food only. He has a refrigerator for salad only, and he has a refrigerator for drinks. So even though he does the cans, they have to be in pairs. The refrigerators represent an entity, which means a specific column, I guess, to put his certain foods in. So because there's three different foods that he deals with, he needs those three separate items or three separate refrigerators. He lines everything up by colors. Okay, another person, Leonardo DiCaprio. He has said to people, I have a psychiatric anxiety disorder. It's called OCD. It's mild to moderate. He's had it most of his adulthood. Quote, and I quote, he feels the urge to walk through doorways multiple times. In fact, in some of his movies, he has walked through multiple doors and I guess sets different times. And then I don't know if this is fact, but I'm surmising that maybe the last time he walked through, it's okay, I'm ready to walk through my last time. People have learned to work with that because he's who he is and he's explained it to people. Because it is a little odd, but to us, but that's the way he copes. He's still a very talented, entertainer, but he does have this obsession. Let's see. Severe OCD, which I consider Leonardo DiCaprio and David Beckman to have, even though he feels it's mild to moderate. Moderate is not severe, but it's more than insignificant. Severe OCD affects 1.2% of US adults. That's not even counting children because children don't know they have it. They have to be told or parents have to help. So those of us adults that know we have it, that's how much it affects us. Let's talk about Jessica Alba. She has come out. She does not have ADD or ADHD, which sometimes goes along with OCD. And she has learned to be very organized. She was in denial, but she felt, it's only helped me do a better job with my profession. And the ADHD and the ADD, they take medication for it. They need to. It's okay. And they're very upfront with it. Cameron Diaz, she's an actress. She has OCD. I don't have much on her, although she says she doesn't have ADD or ADHD. Many times I have read that ADD or ADHD, especially ADHD, affects more men. I think it has to do because of the testosterone level, but I'm not sure. And I need to find more information. And that's not a blanket statement. It's just what I'm finding. And there may be women who have ADD and ADHD, but I'm finding that the women that I have been researching come out and say they do not have ADD and ADHD because that might be something they were tested for. Okay, we talked about music, Justin Timberlake. Now, he said, he, as I said before, he has OCD and ADD. He said that, quote, it affects many areas of his life. He's 27. He lines things up perfectly. He says that ADD, he acknowledges it's a developmental disorder I have. It causes forgetfulness. It causes me to be hyperactive. It causes me to be distracted. And he said, because he lines things up perfectly, that makes him feel good. That's okay. But with ADD, he says his life is very complicated. So by music, by doing things, by, you know, even though we see singers, they might be all over the place. They're like, what are they talking about? Maybe the way they do it, it's an order for them. And you just don't come out and sing a song. They have to figure out how they're going to do it. They have to get the music together. So that's just some of the people that have the affliction. And it is an affliction. That's not said in a negative way, but it's a personality disorder. And it's also an anxiety disorder. And it's also a, you know, in fact, it's personality. They're obsessively compulsive, which means you might be talking to them and they may ask you the same question. That didn't come out so much, but you can see how OCD and obsessive compulsive personality are a mixture of the two. Now, why am I talking about this? Why is this a mental health issue? Because it has to do with our kids. You know where your kids stand. Sometimes we have to understand that mental health, like I said, mental health is health, but you want to make sure that your doctor, like I said before, is not confusing mental health of being depressed with mental health, which is a disorder or personality, which is a brain disorder. And that's what we have to be aware of, as I talked about in previous broadcasts. How do we delineate? How do we separate what things are in OCD? Let me give you an example of my child. So Robert, my son Robert, has autism. He has OCD. He has ADHD. OCD is not just touching and it's physical. For him, it's asking questions but knowing the answer. He will ask a lot of questions. Like I believe I went through this in my past book. He will ask a lot of questions knowing the answer. Also, when he texts, he asks a lot of questions. He knows the answer. What was told to me by his therapist was some kids need to just keep asking the question. They know the answer, but it helps them. It gives them a sense of self and what they're doing. What helps them is a schedule. Who knows? Maybe some of these people write it down. I don't know. The people we just mentioned. But he asks the same questions when he knows the answer. And the comfort level, it gives him a certain amount of comfort. Now, for the rest of us, we say, check your schedule. That's something that he's going to have to live with. It's something that your child might have to live with. Only you can decide. Now, I know I haven't talked about a lot of talking points. Actually, on my show, I'm up at talking point 11 because each of the people I mentioned, Justin Timberlake and Leonardo DiCaprio, they were all talking points. So I'm going to talk about the Howard Hughes story. That's another talking point. That Howard Hughes, it has to do with business because it touches all areas. Howard Hughes was a recluse. He was a recluse. He like stayed to himself. And what has come out of that was there was a reason for it. People would say in the beginning, oh, he just doesn't want to be around people. He's just not friendly. Something's wrong with him. But he had OCD. He probably also had maybe
he was on the spectrum because he didn't want to be around people. But it balances it off because everything physical has to do with mental, and everything mental has to do with mental health challenges. So he did have a challenge. He was very wealthy, but he only let a few people into his life. I believe he might have been sick and he still let a few people. And I believe he also, with his appearance, which sometimes is characteristic of people, you know, on the spectrum or people with disorders, is they let their appearance go. But they have to be taught. So that's why being a role model to your child is so important. But all these people that I mentioned are role models for your children, from music to sports to entertainment to business. Some of them are positive, like many of the entertainers I mentioned. Some of them have had negative, like, you know, consequences or stories about them, like how abuse, but it all teaches us something about people. There are also TV shows about people with mental health disorders. And one in particular, which is has to do with OCD, is called, I really don't know what this show is called, I forget, but it's about people who hoard. That's for people who can't get rid of things, where you walk in their house and they just have so many things. They just have so many things on the floor. They buy things and they don't even remember it now. And they can't get rid of things. And finally, with intervention, they need a help of a crew. They need help of a therapist. They need help of a crew that really understands things. They need help of a doctor. They, you know, it, again, it's teamwork. This is a mental condition. This can be brought about by loss. There was a woman who was so super neat. She was like, super neat, which could be on the other side of OCD, right? But when her husband died unexpectedly, she lost it and she became the opposite. She actually started hoarding things. And when you walked in her house, you just couldn't believe it because she had things all over the place and she had so much going on that she couldn't figure out what to do because her mind was cluttered. She showed it by her surroundings being cluttered. So she went in an opposite direction. There's also people that have always been hoarders and they just grow up to be hoarders and their children have to help them and they can't help them unless they get help because their children are worried about them. Also, there's people who need some really very tough intervention, like all of these people do, but who need someone to say, if you want to stay in your house, if you want to not be evicted, you have to do this. It's very painful. And you can see where they're starting to take things out and they actually cry and they actually say, but you can't do things that are so old that they don't even remember. It's not like us who we might go through things like, why am I saving? Because after a while, just like with me, you get sick of it and you say, I have to get rid of it. And I am getting rid of it. These are people who really are in pain because they have to give things away. They have to learn how to let go. And that's only going to be helped through a mental health professional because mentally they need to have challenges. Physically, they have challenges. Sometimes they don't eat. Sometimes they let themselves go. Sometimes their mind plays games on them. They keep things. They keep things that, I mean, their children don't even know about. You know, they just can't believe it's their parent because mental health is health and people have to recognize that. And when it interferes with your life or the lives of your children, one child in particular said, I invited my mom with me, but she didn't bring a lot of herself, but she brought enough of herself and enough stuff. And after a while, I couldn't live with her because she started laying things all over the place in my house. And like I say, I do feel comfortable talking about this because this has been broadcast on shows, which really is a plus, which is a role model for a lot of us. And these people should be given credit because they're allowing their stories to be told. And that's important because no story could go on without permission. There's also the question of people taking advantage. So they need their children or somebody to take control of their lives. because they can be thrown off on by the street. And many times the children need help to understand how to help their parents. Sometimes it's tough love, sometimes it's not. But everybody needs help because the family dynamic is in trouble. Again, it has to do with connections. So that's a show about mental health, and it's out there. So just to recap, we talked a lot about what's going on in the world, but you know, Ukraine, and we talked about things going on in the neighborhood and what we do, how we make connections, how this world is technologically advanced, how we're all connected, how we're even more connected. But the basic thing is we're all humans. We're not machines. We're not computers. And we care about each other. Countries care about each other. We care about each other. We want to be appreciated. We want to show people that they're appreciated. This goes into our mental health. And with people who have mental health issues, specifically on this show with OCD, we talked about the role models, how there's role models in every area, how there's these role models you can relate to your kids, how our kids with autism a lot of times have OCD. Sometimes they outgrow it in certain ways. Sometimes it shows itself in different ways through not only lining things up or having things be put in perfect order, but also the way they talk to people or react to people. Because OCD, the disorder, and the personality are combined. We also talked about how we as a society are getting more attuned to mental health and how we want to understand it and how we want to help people, because connections is what brings us together. And by realizing that people can get help, you can help your loved one, you can help a friend, but we all need help in this direction. And isn't it wonderful that the media, with the Johnny Depp case and the Amber Heard case, also talks about how different things we need to see and what we need to do. So yes, it's entertainment, but it's also a way for us to learn. It's also a way for us to see ourselves when we've been in situations and how we tense up and how people are always put on the spot and how people are more alike than different. We've also been shown in this show, and I hope I did a good job doing it, that we deal with things in many ways, and we can use our special challenges to be creative, to find creativity, to understand our strengths, or it can be a disruption physically and emotionally, as in hoarders. But these people can get help, and they want help. It's just that you need to not be afraid as a family member, as a community, to say, I'm going to help you. Yes, there's going to be resistance, but there's advocates out there. This is all about being an advocate. There's advocates out there in the way of doctors and children and communities and even the people that come in that are, you know, taking the trash out of the person's house. They have to have an understanding. And you could see how they stand around and everyone's patient and they let the doctor do their job, and they see the people getting upset and they just stand back and say, are you ready? Are you ready for me? And they go and they do their job. It's people from all walks of life that can contribute to helping someone who is in pain, who has a problem, who has a mental health issue or has a personality disorder, because we all go through it. It has to do with understanding. Understanding is the key. Flexibility is the key. I think that this show is very important because it covers so many issues and it covers a lot of what I've always talked about when it comes to people caring about people. And we live in a world where people really do care about people. We a lot of times are bombarded with people doing bad things to other people. But the most part, we are interested in other people. We care about other people. We may not always agree, but we need to respect other people. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody and you have respect, you can agree to disagree. And that's the key. I want to end my show by saying that
I hope that you have a special time with your family. Family is very important. Family dynamics are where you get the start of how you relate to the world. And I've seen it many times. And you will one day be in a position to maybe be the caretaker of your family. And that's a big responsibility. And the more you learn, and the more you learn to look at others and other professionals, don't be afraid to ask for their help. They've done this. You can trust them. You can do it. Only with education. I'm not talking about a degree. I'm talking about knowledge. Only with education, you can help your child. You can help your family. And in the world that we live in, we need to start caring about people, which we do. I found that we do. This is Lisa the K for the Spectrum Talk, A Look Within. I want to leave you with my famous poem that I always say. But before I do, I want you to take good care of your mental health, because mental health is health. It affects your physical health. And if you have a good mental outlook on a physical problem, it will help you in an enormous amount of ways. I'm going to end the program by talking about home. Home sweet home is something that we furnish it with friendship. We decorate it with laughter, and we warm it with love. This is Lisa the K wishing you many healthy days, many happy days with family and friends. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.